and welcome to Mandarin Slang Guide, MSG, the Chinese learning podcast that tastes great and probably isn't all that bad for you. I'm Josh Ogden Davis, bringing you some words and perspectives that aren't in your textbook. Black Lives Matter. Just want to get that out there in case you were wondering. And coincidentally, this week's topic does have a lot to do with diversity and prejudice. We'll be talking about some of the different regional stereotypes that people in China have about each other. Now, I had the idea for this episode back in March when I was thinking about how Chinese people and Asians abroad were facing some ridiculous racism in the wake of COVID-19. But before I actually got the show edited, Black Lives Matter came back into the spotlight in the USA in a big way. And at the core of both of these issues is an inability for us to see someone who is different from us and believe that they are as complex and as rich and as deep as human, basically, as we are. And ironically, I really do believe that one of the best ways to see another group as human, or to humanize another group, is to learn about the divisions within that group, because then we're one step closer to being able to see each person as an individual and not as a representative of some monolithic other culture. So with that in mind, I called up my friend and friend of the show, Wan Ying, to talk about some of the different regional stereotypes within mainland China. Hi, Wan Ying. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you. And you?
I'm doing well, too. You told me when we were talking about this topic that one of the first questions that Chinese people ask each other when they meet each other is, 你是哪里人? You are what place person, or where are you from? 你是哪里人? When you're getting to know someone, why is that question so important?
But first, I want to ask you, do you think this is true? Do you get asked a lot?
Absolutely, yeah. I get it a lot because I'm clearly not from here.
Oh, well,
but
sure,
I also see...
Sorry, that was a dumb question. Yeah.
But I see Chinese people doing it all the time as well. I hear
all
it a lot.
All the time. So the starter conversation between two Chinese people probably goes like, 你好. 我叫于婉莹,我是湖北人。你叫什么名字?你是哪里人? It just comes very naturally. It goes just like that.
So you said, hello, I am Yu Wanying. I am from Hubei.
Where are you from?
Yeah, where are you from?
Yeah.
So it's like your calling card. That is the elevator pitch for yourself.
Yep.
That is the one word explanation of how I should understand you. So what can you learn from someone by knowing where they're from?
I think it's a very quick way to assign somebody to be either a laoxiang or not.
Ooh, laoxiang. What does laoxiang mean?
Folks who are from the same place as I am. I don't know.
Yeah. So if we are from the same city, then we are laoxiang.
Yeah.
So you would be my laoxiang and I am your laoxiang. We are laoxiang.
Yes, and the border can vary a lot. For example, if we are all Chinese people abroad, we are considered to be laoxiang.
Yeah.
But if we are inside China, of course we are not. Like if we are both from Hubei province, then we are laoxiang.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when we are in Hubei, you have to be coming from the same city as I am to be considered laoxiang. So also, I think where you're from is really a very strong... The question is really very strongly related to your identity.
Mm.
People need to figure it out. It's just the way it is. And if you are my laoxiang, we are naturally closer to each other. We are supposed to stick together and help each other out.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are not laoxiang, we can still continue the conversation by bantering over customs or food over each other's hometown. Or home region.
Yeah. One of the things I really want to get at by talking about this topic is the difference between an outsider's perspective of Chinese people as being one thing, a monolithic culture where all Chinese people are sort of all laoxiang, but Chinese people, when viewing each other, see huge differences between each other in the same way that someone who grew up in Brooklyn is going to talk and act and think in different ways from someone who grew up in Seattle or LA.
I would even say Long Island or New Jersey.
Yeah, maybe just a few blocks away. You're going to have a completely different culture, basically.
Yeah.
So what are some of the basic regions of China. Like for the USA, we have East Coast, West Coast, Midwest. We have the South. Mm-hmm. We have the Deep South. We have the Southwest. We have the Great Lakes area. We have all these little gradations. What are some of the basic stereotypical areas of China?
Okay, before I answer, I strongly invite our listeners to whip out a map of China.
Hold on, let me.
Preferably a topographical map.
Spread it out. Yes, very big.
Yeah.
Yes, got it.
Because geography is playing a very important role in here, mm-hmm. okay? When we are talking about dividing the country into regions. Mm. So let me whip out my map too. Let's begin from the northeast, mm-hmm. Dongbei, and go clockwise.
Let's talk about the chicken. Because like Michigan, the state of Michigan is like a glove,
yeah.
right? It looks like a little mitten hand. Mm. The analogy I hear most often for China is the chicken, because it kind of looks like a gigantic chicken in some ways. Mm. So we're starting from the head of the chicken, from the northeast, right?
Yes. Dongbei traditionally means the three provinces of the northeast, Heilongjiang, Jilin, and Liaoning. Mm-hmm. Also, sometimes the east part of Inner Mongolia. Sometimes also considered by some people as Dongbei.
So that's area number one called Dongbei, which is literally east north. So the northeast part, Dongbei.
Yep. And we move a little bit down south. We have Huabei.
Huabei.
So literally that means North China.
Yeah. So this Hua is a fascinating character because it's part of the official name for China in Chinese. Mm. But Hua by itself is a stand-in for China. So Huabei, China North. So the north part of China, Huabei. Mm.
North China usually consists of Beijing, the capital city, Tianjin, mm-hmm. the province of Hebei and Shandong. That's the Huabei Pingyuan, Huabei Plain.
Pingyuan is like flat grassland. So it's the Pingyuan, the plains.
And to the west of that, you have Huangtu Gaoyuan.
Oh.
Yeah, Shanxi Sheng and Shanxi Sheng make Huangtu Gaoyuan.
Oh no, those two confusing provinces that sound almost exactly the same. Shanxi and Shanxi.
Shanxi, Shanxi.
Yeah. And just for some context, that Shanxi is where Xi'an is. That's where like the terracotta warriors are.
Yeah.
So this Huangtu Gaoyuan is the yellow earth high plains. Literally Huangtu Gaoyuan, yellow earth high plains. And that's when you see that desert area and the terracotta warriors, that's what we're talking about.
And then a little bit north to that is the province of Henan. That's traditionally considered the real China. Zhongyuan, the Middle Earth.
Ooh, Zhongyuan.
Middle Plain.
Which is funny because if you're following along on a map like you're supposed to be, like teacher Wan Ying told you to, then you would see that this Zhongyuan is no longer in the center of modern China. It's
right.
actually really far out to far out to the east of China. But traditionally, in terms of ancient China and mainstream China's conception of itself, this is the center of Chinese history and culture, really.
Right. And south to that, Hunan, Hubei, Anhui, Jiangxi are considered the boring provinces of the middle.
The flyover states, the nothing here, move along.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Hubei. My husband from Hunan, so.
Is there a name for that flyover country? Is there a name for that grouping of provinces?
中部省市.
中部省市.
Right. And then along the coast, you have the province of Jiangsu, Zhejiang, Fujian, Guangdong, and of course, the city of Shanghai.
Yeah.
These places, these provinces are the most wealthy and most developed provinces in China. 东南沿海.
东南沿海. Wow. I've never heard it called that before, so I'm learning a lot here. So 东南, east, south, and then 沿海. 沿 means following along, and 海 is the sea. Mm. So the southeastern seaboard, basically. 东南沿海.
Right. And of course, some people from Jiangsu and Zhejiang consider themselves to be Dongbuyanhai.
Dongbuyanhai. Why would they want to separate themselves from the Dongnanyanhai? Why would they want their own Yanhai?
Because their culture is different from those from Fujian and Guangdong, basically.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why it's so hard to break China down into areas, because economically, the Dongnan Yanhai is prosperous for much of the same reasons, but culturally, they're very different. Yep. You're going all the way from Shanghai with its history and culture, all the way down to Guangdong, which is Canton, with its own language and its own history. So economically, they're quite similar, but culturally, they can be very different.
That's why I ask you to whip out your topographical map. If you check on that, you'll see there are mountains between the province of Zhejiang and Fujian. Geographically, they don't really communicate between each other very much because the mountains, they are huge mountains.
Yeah.
Right? So we go still clockwise. You have Taiwan. Either you consider that a country or a province. It's your own opinion. It's okay. And we have Hainan. The island, Hainan Sheng,
yeah.
Right? When you think about Hainan, it's a new development district. It's a vacation spot. A lot of people from Dongbei buy real estate in Hainan to the point where you actually have 派出所,
police stations
of the city of Harbin in Haikou.
You're kidding me.
I am not kidding you.
There's a Harbin police station in a different province just because so many Northeasterners live there.
Yeah, that's real.
That's incredible.
I'm not making that up.
There's a stereotype in the States about how all the good land in Colorado is being bought up by Texans, and I'm a Texan, and my family owns land in Colorado. So I noticed I lived in Hainan actually for a year, and people would make jokes about how it's little Dongbei, Xiao Dongbei.
Yeah.
Because Dongbei is very cold and harsh, and Hainan is a tropical island. So,
okay, let's go a little bit to the west.
Yeah.
You have Xinan Sheng Shi.
Xinan Sheng Shi. Maya, there's so many areas.
Because, well, actually, the mainland China is not as big as America, continental America, of course, but the geography is a little bit more complex than America, right? You have the Rocky Mountains, you have the plateaus, the plains, and in the middle is a huge plain from north to south, and in the east is East Coast, right? But in China, it's much more complicated than that. So traditionally, we divide the country into more regions.
So this Xinan Sheng Shi, this is west-south provinces and cities, Xinan Sheng Shi. What is in Xinan Sheng Shi?
The city of Chongqing and the province of Sichuan.
Ah, Sichuan.
The province of Guizhou, Guangxi, and Yunnan are considered to be southwest. Yeah.
Yeah, and these are all fascinating provinces. Maybe I think that just because I lived in Guangzhou when I first moved to China, but these provinces all seem very ethnically distinct.
Exactly.
And they don't really have a lot of the mainstream Chinese cultural history. Like we talked a while ago about how what they call the Zhongyuan, the center of Chinese culture, is actually sort of almost kind of in the northeastern-ish area, whereas these areas have very different dialects and very different traditional cultures.
I would say Chongqing and Sichuan are more closely related to what you might think of China as it is.
Yeah.
And then in Yunnan, Guizhou, and Guangxi, there are a lot of, I'm trying to think of a polite way of calling them, minor ethnic groups. I don't know.
I also hesitate about this because in Chinese, we call them 少数民族, which means minority ethnic groups.
That's not a very good sounding word in English, right?
Well, I think the reason behind that is that's a word that only makes sense from outside the culture. If you're inside the culture, you're not a minority.
Yep.
You are the culture. Yeah, the idea is these are different cultures, basically, from mainstream Chinese culture.
They are minor in comparison of the Han people.
Right, yeah. Minor in comparison to the country that they currently belong to.
Yeah. So a little bit west to that is Xizang, Tibet. It's so huge that I think it's appropriate to name it on itself.
Hmm.
The culture, the people are also different from the Han people. So Xizang is Xizang itself. Then north to Xizang is Xinjiang.
Yeah.
The Uyghur district. Again, Xinjiang is so huge and so culturally distinct that I think it's appropriate to call it on itself too.
Yeah.
And a little bit east to that, you have Gansu, Qinghai, Ningxia.
Mm.
Oh, that's...
Yeah. And now,
I'm tired. No, I'm not.
I didn't expect you to go into this much detail. And this is fantastic because I'm learning a lot. But these three provinces that you just mentioned, we're kind of backing up again into the Huangdu Gaoyuan. We're sort of completing our clockwise trek around the chicken.
Yeah, but actually, no, not Huangdu Gaoyuan. They are more closely related to the southwest.
Oh, really?
Because Qinghai is still located on the high plains of Qingzhang Gaoyuan.
So those three states are, or provinces, maybe are culturally more related to the western parts of China than to the eastern part where the traditional Han Chinese culture is.
Yes, absolutely. In Ningxia and Gansu and Qinghai, a lot of the residents there are Muslims.
So this sort of completes our trek around the chicken, right?
And Inner Mongolia, of course.
Ah, right, which is culturally very similar to Mongolia itself.
Yeah. And if you want to be particularly politically correct.
And I do.
When talking about this, you will have to mention, of course, Xiangang, Hong Kong, Aomen, Macau, and the islands.
The islands.
And the islands, of course.
You're talking about the islands in the South China Sea, almost all of which I think are disputed by the neighboring countries.
Yeah, and don't be surprised in China when talking about these issues that most people you have conversations with will believe firmly that Taiwan is a province of China and all those South China Sea islands belong to China. That's just how people believe.
It's a topic that I've learned not to bring up at all.
Yeah.
Unless you're an extremely confrontational person, it doesn't matter which side of the issue that you're on. Every time it comes up, there are people who defend it very fiercely.
Or unless you know the people you are talking with are okay on these issues.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that it's better to know what they think about it before you talk about it. It's a paradox.
Exactly. So let's recap.
Yes, excellent. You go through the provinces, and if you don't have a map in front of you, I will call out what part of the chicken we're talking about right now.
Okay, so we begin from the peak, the head of the chicken. You have the Dongbei, northeast, which consists of the province of Heilongjiang, Jilin, Liaoning, and part of Inner Mongolia.
Yes, that area kind of has the somewhat homogenous Dongbei culture that we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yes. South to that, actually, there are provinces you can group together as Dongbu Shengshi, Hebei, Shanxi, Shanxi, Shandong, Henan, Anhui, Hubei, Jiangxi, Hunan.
Oh, wow. So that's sort of the neck of the chicken all the way down to the intestines of the chicken.
Yes. It's just a whole big plains in the middle. Then along the coastline, the provinces of Jiangsu, Zhejiang, Fujian, Guangdong.
Yeah, so that's the front and underbelly of the chicken.
Yes.
And these are these rich coastal provinces.
And moving west, we have Sichuan, Chongqing, Guizhou, Yunnan, Guangxi.
I've backed myself into a corner, Wan Ying, because I'm describing which part of the chicken we're talking about, and this is clearly the butt. And now I have to say that they're the butt of the chicken.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have set myself up for that.
Oh, they're cool with that. They must have been dealing with that their whole life, so don't worry about it.
And these are provinces that have distinct cultures, basically. If you see traditional, usually those like flashy traditional headdresses and multicolored clothes and people dancing in a forest or whatever, usually those are taken from this area of China.
Yeah. And to the west, Daxibu, the larger west.
Daxibu, big west part. Daxibu, the tail of the chicken, if you will.
Yes. In that part, you'll find Tibet, Xizang, Xinjiang, Qinghai, Gansu, Ningxia,
Yes. So we finally come back around to Inner Mongolia, the western half of Inner Mongolia, the very distinct cultures of Tibet, of Xinjiang, where the Uyghur culture is, and the Huizhu, or ethnically Han Muslim cultures that are dominant in Qinghai, Gansu, and Ningxia.
Yep. Oh, and Hainan. Yes.
Yeah. So we've gone in great detail about how these areas are broken up. Now let's get into a little bit of the details about how these cultures and how these different places view each other. understanding how these places view each other, I think, really helps. It has helped me sort of be able to look at China without my American sunglasses on, right? Like try to see China a little bit in the way that a Chinese person might see China.
Now, this is a very dangerous topic because this is so-called 引战话题.
引战话题, inviting war topic. 引战话题.
Because, of course, there are a lot of existing stereotypes over different parts of China.
Yeah.
So let's do it anyway, yeah.
Let's start with the division, which is somewhat nationwide, of cities versus the countryside. Mm. This is one of the biggest stereotypes that I've run into. I've lived in southern China. I've lived in northern China. I'm now living on the belly button of the chicken, which is Shanghai. I haven't lived in the West, but I've visited. But no matter where I go, there's always a division between countryside and the cities. So cities are 城市. Mm. What would you call the countryside?
乡下.
乡下. So, xiang is a word for like county. It's a municipal division, right? And xia means under. It means like down in the counties. Is that a good interpretation of it?
Yes, very good. Yeah.
Xiang xia. Yeah. And what would you call someone from the countryside?
Xiang xia ren or xiang li ren.
Xiang li ren. So, in the county people or xiang xia ren, under the county, down in the counties people.
Mm.
What are some of the ways that cheng shi ren and xiang xia ren, how do they see each other?
乡里人, countrymen, country folks, or sometimes even peasants.
Now we're getting into the very loaded words.
That's of course, it depends on how you use this word, right?
Yeah.
It can be very insulting and it can be very neutral. And I often refer myself as 乡下人 because I come from a very, very, very small.
Me too.
Yeah, well, East Texas. Mm-hmm.
Hold on.
I have nothing against Texas. Okay. Yeah, so Chinese 乡下人 are stereotypically, of course, I have to stop adding these words. We are the whole episode is about stereotypes.
Right.
So we are believed to be less wealthy, less haven't had a chance to see the world, I say.
Yeah, so have sort of a narrower worldview.
Yeah, and not cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about that. And xiangliren from different places of China can mean different things too. So on the other hand, chengliren, city people, are believed to be, I don't know, fancy, rich, cool, yangqi.
Yangqi. Yangqi is a fun word because I understand it to mean like international flavor, right?
I hate
maybe
that word.
Cosmopolitan.
But it's very useful.
On the positive side, I've heard people use the phrase 成会玩 when talking about 城里人. Well, what does this 成会玩 mean?
成会玩 is short for 城里人就是会玩. City people knows how to have fun.
Yeah, 城里人会玩, 玩 meaning to play. So people in the cities know how to have fun. 成会玩.
Yeah, but 成会玩 is something you type on your phone, on your computer, in text, but not really in speaking language, I think.
Oh.
Because 成会玩, when you say that, it sounds a little bit internet-y.
Oh, yeah. I guess it would be like saying LOL out loud or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So where do you see 成会玩?
I read this word most often used on Shanghai, or people from Shanghai.
On Shanghai?
Yeah.
Huh.
Shanghai is the 城里. Shanghai is absolutely the city.
MSD is coming down hard on this side of the Beijing-Shanghai debate. Guangzhou is not at the table. Chongqing is not at the table. It's just Shanghai these days.
Listen, I've been to all those places. I have lived in Beijing for 4 years, and it's not the same thing as Shanghai.
So what do Shanghai people do that would cause someone to react with 成会玩?
It's the most advanced and most open-minded city of mainland China. I feel comfortable to say that, especially when my job is reviewing museums.
I go
to Beijing and Shanghai very often. Mm-hmm. And I think the worldview of a city can be very much reflected in their museums and in their galleries.
Mm.
In Beijing, if you go to a museum, a state-owned museum, let's say, most of the time you'll see some exhibitions that's very political, that's very controlled, that's very tense. But in Shanghai, exhibitions exist for the purpose of exhibition only. They are freer in a way.
But I've heard from other people Chinese people that Shanghai is anything but open-minded, especially if you yourself are not from Shanghai. And this is a great transition into our next topic. We just talked a little bit about countryside versus the cities. Now we're going to talk a little bit about hometown bias. One of the things that I've noticed about everywhere I've lived in China is that everyone has a hometown bias. And I think it's true for probably everyone in the world, right? Everyone believes that where they're from is the best. And Shanghai people are probably the most famous for this hometown bias. And there's a word for this bias, and it's a great word. Do you know which word I'm talking about?
Of course, paiwai.
Paiwai. Yeah. People say that people from Shanghai are very, very paiwai. Can you break down paiwai for me?
Exclusive, I would say.
Yeah.
Push out those who are not from the same kind of us.
Oh. Why means outside. So this pai, I've always sort of wondered how to interpret that. But you just interpret it as like a push.
Yeah. Aside from push, pai can also be translated into exclude, eject, discharge.
Yeah. So just rejecting outside people and things is very paiwai.
Yeah.
So whereas Shanghai can be seen as very open-minded for international things, people from other places in China could perhaps be looked down upon by local Shanghai people. When I was working in Beijing, our company would send a small team to Shanghai all the time because one of our big clients was in Shanghai. And I thought it was fine. I didn't feel anything. It just felt like another big city to me. But my colleagues, almost all of whom were Beijingers, always complained about how paiwai Shanghai was. Have you felt that before?
Well, first, I would like to add that paiwai, well, of course, it means exclusive, but it's not yet to the degree of xenophobia.
Ah, yeah.
There's a difference in that. And Shanghai, well, back in the days when I have not really visited Shanghai frequently myself, I had this impression too. But this is only an image. This is only a stereotype that I see on TV and films. I heard people say that Shanghaiers are very paiwai. So that's just a hearsay. These years, I visit Shanghai several times a year. I have personally known a lot of people from Shanghai, and I find them to be just false victims of the bad name.
Yeah.
They're okay. They are not that bad. Sometimes, of course, some people from Shanghai are a little bit snobby. Only sometimes, though. You mentioned people from Beijing.
Yeah.
And having spent my 4 years of university in Beijing and having personally know a lot of local Beijing people as my very close friends, I know they tend to be very proud. And sometimes proud people just cannot have prouder people around them, I guess. It's okay. Yeah. It's not that big a deal, I think.
It's funny because when I was living in Guangzhou, the first place I lived in China, the perspective I got of the other places in China were things that Guangzhou people were telling me. So when I moved to Beijing, some of my Guangzhou friends said, "Ai, don't go to Beijing. Beijing ren hen paiwai." So Beijing ren are very rejecting of others. And then when I lived in Beijing, I thought that it was fine. And they said, "Oh, when you lived in Guangzhou, didn't you think that Cantonese people were very paiwai?" And I was like, "Oh, you think that about each other. That's funny." So paiwai is this word that has followed me around China, but always pointed somewhere else other than where the person saying it is from.
The more you travel, the more you let go of your own identity, the less you will feel being paiwai'd.
Yeah. All right. So we've talked about two different kinds of stereotypes inside China so far. We've talked about countryside versus the cities, which is Xiangxiaren and Chengliren. We've talked a little bit about the hometown bias, which is being very paiwai. Now let's jump into what we were talking about a minute ago with all the different regions in China, because each of these regions has a distinct stereotype associated with it. Let's start from some of the worst stereotypes. Now, this is a tricky part in MSG because I don't like to teach you bad words. I don't like to give you tools to be hurtful to other people. But we're going to dip into these a little bit for two reasons. First of all, they can help you understand sort of the complexity of some local Chinese people's conceptions of their own country. It helps you see that picture more complexly and not as monolithically. Mm. And second of all, you might hear these words used at some point and you will know what they mean, but I would not encourage you to use any of these words that we're about to talk about. And we'll probably just gloss over them briefly.
Mm-hmm.
In preparing for this episode, you brought up a couple words. And the first word that you mentioned was 井盖.
Yeah, mental cover.
Well, how did 井盖 become a stereotype term for people from a part of China?
井盖 is closely related to the stereotypes against people from Henan province. 河南人, or more specifically, 故事县人, like the county of 故事, were accused of stealing 井盖.
What?
Stealing manhole cover to resell as iron material.
Whoa, that is a lot of sweat equity. Those things are heavy.
And causing casualties, because without manhole cover, people will fall down into them, things like that.
Oh, geez.
If this is based on real events, we cannot really investigate, because the rumor dates back to pre-internet times. there were, of course, some reality behind these rumors, because there are some counties in Henan, their main income resource is to resell 垃圾回收, recycling garbage.
Yeah.
That's their main income source.
Yeah.
And also 井盖, manhole cover, is just a symbol item. Henanren are accused of stealing all kinds of public resources, as cables, fences, and the stories gets more and more ridiculous if you dig on a little bit on the internet.
Were they accused of stealing these things from their own areas? I don't understand how that would work.
No, they travel around the country and steal all the manhole covers, of course. And then,
oh my goodness.
At some point, it had turned into a meme. It had turned into a... some of my friends who are from Henan, they actually own it and have a 井盖 image on their profile picture. Like, yeah, I am from Henan. I am a Henanren. I steal 井盖 everywhere. Just beware of me. That's that. The way you use it is like, here comes a Henanren. 看好你的井盖, protect your 井盖. 井盖 is only an example. There are a lot of items, a lot of things who have this kind of stories behind them.
Mm.
For example, our next word we are going to talk about is 切糕.
切糕. So this is literally cutting a cake, right? 切 is to cut something, and 糕 is like a cake or a pastry.
It literally means cut cake.
Yeah.
So what it is? What is a 切糕? 切糕 is a very huge cake made of layers and layers of delicious dried fruits, nuts, and candy.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dense, full of flavor. It is called gao, which translates into cake.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, there is not that much of flour used in this cake. It's more of a big candy, huge candy. Of course, we're talking about Xinjiang 切糕 here.
Oh, Xinjiang 切糕.
Yeah, other regions have their own versions of 切糕.
It sounds great so far. I don't understand where the stereotypes are coming in, because so far you have described a delicious pastry to me and I'm all on board. Where does this go wrong?
You know, Xinjiang is a very big province and we have a lot of different ethnic groups there.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest of them is Uyghur. Mm-hmm. Some Uyghur people came into Koli. That's the way of calling inner provinces by Xinjiang people, Koli.
Well, break that down for me. I've never heard that before.
Koli means inside the gate or inside the great wall.
Oh,
yeah.
So Li is a Li that means inside, like Cheng Li Ren, in the city people. What's the first character there?
Kou, mouth.
Oh.
Well, traditionally, Kou Li he Kou Wai is divided by the great wall.
Oh.
Inside the great wall is considered to be traditional Chinese, China.
Huh.
And Xinjiang is outside the wall. So they call us, who live in the inner China, Kou Li Ren.
I had never heard that before. This is sort of eye-opening for me.
That's a very useful word if you ever visit Xinjiang. 我从口里来的.
I just came from inside the wall.
Yeah.
我从口里来的. I from inside the wall came. 我从口里来了.
Well, that's too much information. So, so I'll go on. I'll go on explaining the Qiagao story. Okay, so the Uyghur people, they came to Koli or inner provinces to sell Qiagao. They don't really have a boutique or a store or something, only a trolley.
Okay.
If you want to buy some Qiagao, they will cut you a piece from the big Qiagao and sell it to you by weight. Mm-hmm. Normally, food or grocery in China are sold in jin, which is 500 grams, half a kilo.
Yeah.
But after the client have their cut, the seller would suddenly inform the buyer that the price was not by jin but by liang, which is 50 grams. So you have to pay 10 times the money you thought you were going to pay.
Oh.
And they wouldn't let you go. You have to pay up.
Oh.
And the pretense here is that they don't speak that very well Chinese. The communication had went wrong. You didn't understand me well enough. I have to sell this Qiagao to you at a far higher price. And if you refuse, I'll ask my friends around to help me enforce this trade. And by the way, exactly the same story happened to me when I was in Venice, Italy. The fish,
really?
Fish there was sold by 100 grams rather than certain price per dish. I ordered a fish. I thought it was 7 euros. And then when they charged me, they told me that the fish was sold 7 euros per 100 grams. So I ate a very expensive fish anyways. So naturally, there were some conflicts over Qiagao, and the news got very widely spread. And there was a huge racist public opinion against the Uyghur people at the time. I think that's about 10 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, people believed them as all dishonest and troublemakers and gangs.
Right.
It's a stereotype that blown way out of proportion. And on top of that, to make things worse, Uyghur people are easily recognized. They look different. They talk different. They dress different.
Yeah.
So they are easy targets. It's very sad, but I don't know. How can you change the public opinion on things like this?
Yeah.
What I can do is to keep telling people this is not true, to keep telling people not enforce stereotypes against others. But it takes a lot of work.
So that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to do this episode, helping other people understand what Chinese people from different areas think of each other helps people see China as something very diverse. And when we lump Chinese people all together in one group, we're sort of lumping people who feel like they have very little to do with each other in most ways into one group. And that's not a very great way to do it. So now that I've brought the mood down, let's jump on to our next topic, which is less harmful stereotypes. We just talked about jingai, which is manhole covers that people from Henan were often accused of stealing. We talked about qiagao, which is a common scam for cake sellers from Xinjiang. Those are some really harmful stereotypes. There are some less harmful stereotypes that still shed light on different regions of China. The first one that you brought up is Dongbei Ren. And again, Dongbei is the northeastern area of China.
Yeah.
But the stereotype of that people has become so strong that just saying Dongbei Ren is enough to give you a clear picture of a personality.
Yeah.
What is that personality like?
Well, do you know who's Zhao Benshan?
I don't. I'm so culturally illiterate.
Don't worry about it. So Dongbei Ren are believed to be, again, these are stereotypes, folks. Dongbei Ren are believed to be tough, humorous.
Huh.
They drink a lot. They enjoy fur.
They enjoy what?
Fur. Fur coats.
Oh, fur coats. Okay.
And men will hit their wives.
You had me until then.
And get in fight easily. Wears gold?
Wears gold? Okay.
Oh, chains. A little bit of rapper. The image of Dongbei Ren is largely established by Zhao Benshan, the person I mentioned earlier. He's a very famous comedian who performs every year on the Spring Festival Gala.
Yeah, the Chunwan. We've talked about that before.
Presenting himself as a stereotypical Dongbei Nongmin, Northeast peasant.
Yeah, nongmin meaning peasant people, nongmin, or xiangxiaren, basically.
Yeah. Of course, that's how the comedy comes from. He has to establish a very typical image of himself and work around that. But I think he did too good of a job that people who haven't been to Dongbei actually think that's the whole picture. Well, I'm pointing at myself here. Mm-hmm. I kind of believe that's how people from Dongbei behave themselves. Mm. And you know, the Spring Festival Gala, they are on Chongbo re-air all the time.
Oh.
Before internet, that's all I watch on TV. So it's reinforced again and again. As a person from Hubei, I understand with no difficulty the Dongbei dialect, thanks to Zhao Benshan.
Wow.
I watched too much of his shows.
Yeah.
Of course, most of them are just an image. For example, the fur coat buying thing.
The fur coat and the gold chains, gold rings, that's a myth?
Yes. Not a myth, but our Chinese listeners now might have a grin on their face. Because it's true that people from Dongbei actually are very attached to their fur coats. Mm. Even today, yeah, if you want to please someone, your wife, for example, mm-hmm. buy her a fur coat. It's a traditional gift that is considered very generous and very 有面子,
having face,
yeah. It's changing, of course. Not everybody is like this, but I personally know some people from Dongbei who actually own several coat furs.
All right, so we've painted a pretty clear picture of the Dongbei ren stereotype. Mm. Let's contrast that with a different stereotype. There are a lot of stereotypes around the city of Wenzhou, which is in the southeastern seaboard. Mm. What are some stereotypes about Wenzhou ren?
Wenzhou ren are basically Chinese Jewish people.
Oh, that's very loaded.
Just think of all those Jewish stereotypes that they are very good at business. Mm-hmm. They cling to each other. They spend a lot of time with their families. Mm-hmm. Wenzhou people are the first to immigrate abroad to Europe and to America.
Yeah.
In the news, you may often read about Wenzhou Chao Fang Tuan a few years ago.
Chao Fang Tuan.
Yeah. A group of people from Wenzhou, they hoard real estate. They are real estate speculators.
So Chao Fang Tuan, this is a great word. Chao means to stir fry something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Fang is house, and Tuan is a group or a circle of people. So Chao Fang Tuan is a house cooking group. And you're saying that a bunch of people would pool their money and flip real estate or hoard real estate in other areas?
Yes. So they get blamed a lot.
Yeah.
Because the price went up. Because of them. And when you think about Wenzhou, you might also think of their dialect, which is basically encrypted. The story goes, during the Vietnamese War, instead of using codes, you just have two soldiers from Wenzhou and let them telephone each other. And nobody will intercept and nobody will understand a word they're saying.
Hold on. Okay, so...
I'm telling you, Wenzhou dialect is a foreign language.
So the USA did a similar thing where Native Americans or Indians were used for this. They would just speak to each other in their native language and no one else could speak that language. And there was no way for anyone else to learn it. So that was as effective as code.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea that the Wenzhou dialect was so different. It's not similar to the dialects around it.
Not at all. Out of nowhere language. I have a roommate in my university. She's from Yiwu, also a city in Zhejiang.
Yeah.
When she talks... It sounds very much like Japanese.
Huh.
You remember when we were talking in the WeChat group of MSG, I mentioned that people from Yiwu would pronounce R as L?
Oh, yeah.
That's the same phenomenon in Japanese. And the L they pronounce is very specific. It's not like L in English, for example. It's a very specific sound between R and L.
Which is a great segue because... One of the areas that actually has a dialect that is somewhat similar to Mandarin, despite not being in the north at all, is Sichuan or Sichuan.
Yeah.
Most Sichuan languages are more closely related to Mandarin than the surrounding provinces. What are some stereotypes of Sichuan people?
Oh my God. 吃辣, 能吃辣, 爱吃辣, eat spicy, eat spicy food. I think that's the biggest stereotype.
You mentioned earlier that when people ask each other, oh, where are you from? You learn a lot about that person based on where they're from, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if someone says, oh, I'm from Sichuan or I'm from Hunan or something like that, the follow-up question will almost always be,
那你肯定能吃辣吧?
那你肯定能吃辣。那, then, 你, you, 肯定, of course. 能, can, 吃辣, eat spicy food. 那你肯定能吃辣呀。
Exactly. Especially when you meet somebody for the first time at dinner table.
Ah.
The conversation goes fluently from, hello, how are you? My name is, I am from, oh, you're from Sichuan. Then 你肯定很能吃辣呀. Goes like this.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of my foreign friends like to complain about how when they meet people like taxi drivers, they always get asked the same questions. Like, where are you from? I'm from America.
Yeah.
Did you vote for Trump? No or yes, depending on who you are. Do you play basketball? Do you have a gun? Like, it's always the same questions. But that happens to different areas of China as well. Like, where are you from? I'm from Dongbei. Do you have a fur coat? Where are you from? I'm from Sichuan. Oh, you must eat spicy food. Like, it's these cookie cutter conversations are happening everywhere.
Yes. Yes. And I would like to point out, aside from Sichuan, there are the following provinces, which are also considered to be very 能吃辣. You have Sichuan, Chongqing, of course, then Guizhou, Yunnan, Hunan, Hubei, and Xinjiang.
Oh, Xinjiang is also a spicy eating place.
Very spicy.
I had no
so
idea.
So spicy that you will regret the next morning, for sure.
Yeah, so the spicy areas, hold on, let me pull up this map. Aside from Xinjiang, the spicy eating areas are all basically southwestern areas, right? Or south central?
Yes. Mm.
Okay, which is funny because Guangdong or Canton is a decidedly not spicy place.
Not at all.
They're sort of stereotypically not able to eat spicy.
The saying is that because Xinan Dichu, the southwest region, is very humid, and the humidity is bad for your health. So you have to eat a lot of spicy food to sweat a lot, to detox
it's
it.
It's so humid. I have to sweat to compensate.
You have to, like, you have to detox, basically, by eating a lot of chili.
Huh.
That's the theory there.
Maybe I should eat some more chilies.
Yeah, but then again, that's not true. Well, my husband is from Hunan. I'm from Hubei. But he, 他就不能吃辣. Basically, he cannot touch a pepper.
他不能吃辣.
Mm.
He not can eat spicy. 他不能吃辣.
Yeah, so 能吃辣 is a very popular topic on the dinner table.
Yeah. I've heard people describe Sichuan people as being spicy as well. It's sort of a synesthetic interpretation of spicy food equals spicy people.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Yes. If you really want to know, well, girls from Sichuan are believed to be very pretty. They have very good skin because they eat a lot of pepper, so they detox. And soldiers from these provinces, soldiers from Sichuan, Chuanjun, and soldiers from Hunan, Xiangjun, are very good soldiers.
Uh-huh.
And Sichuan 男人, men from Sichuan are believed to be afraid of their wives.
Their wives are too spicy. You can't you can't handle it.
There's a lot of nonsense like this.
I recently learned the phrase 少不入川.
Ah, yeah.
Which is, 少 means like a young person or a youth. 不 is no. 入 is enter. And 川 is short for Sichuan.
Mm.
So it means when you're young, you should not go to Sichuan. 少不入川. And it was, this was explained to me as basically, life is great in Sichuan. It's chill, it's clean, there's mountains, it's beautiful, the food is great, supposedly the women are spicy, and so you should not go there as a young person, you should retire there. Because if you go there when you're too young, you will have no ambition.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll just sort of waste your life drinking and playing mahjong and eating spicy food and womanizing. So, 少不入川.
Yes, it's a very popular saying, and well, I say, since you have this human paradise in Sichuan, why not just go there right now?
Yeah.
Why wait?
I'm flabbergasted. Why do you need ambition? You need ambition so you can get what you want. But if you can have it anyway, 就赶紧入川吧.
Yeah.
赶紧 is hurry up to do something or immediately. Don't waste any time. 赶紧入川吧. Let's go.
But seriously, it's really comfy. It's really chill in Chengdu. I love it there.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of museums to visit for me. I have a lot of I have a lot of museums to visit. They are very interesting museums. The food is delicious and it's very reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
people are nice. You can sit in the sunshine playing mahjong the whole afternoon. Oh my God, I never wanted to leave.
Well, thank you guys for listening to this episode of MSG, which, by the way, apparently has been sponsored by the Chongqing Tourism Bureau, because we're doing a great job here for Chongqing. And I do expect a check in the mail. I don't know if anyone from the bureau is listening, but hey, we did the ad. We need some of that cheese. We need some of that spicy pepper as payback. This might be my longest MSG interview yet. We've been going for an hour and 40 minutes so far.
Let's try and cut that into 40 minutes, I think.
I'll cut it into 15. And I want to thank you a lot for talking about this with me, because this is a very tricky topic, and we've sort of tiptoed around some amusing, but also some somewhat uncomfortable topics.
No worries. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And of course, to everyone who is working from home, who is practicing social distancing, stay at home. Yes. And let's hope together that things will get better much quickly.
Yes, you got to stay at home.
That's all the MSG we have for you today. If you want to talk with us about today's topic, feel free to join the MSG WeChat group. Just add my WeChat, MSG Podcast. That's all one word, lowercase, MSG Podcast. If you want some flashcards of today's words, or if you want to connect on social media, find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Just search for Mandarin Slang Guide. Now, we skirted around some very political issues today, and in as much as avoiding political topics in itself is a political act, I want to go on record saying that the official view of MSG, and not necessarily that of any of its guests, is that Taiwan is a country, the Hong Kong protests deserve our support, and of course, that Black Lives Matter. Thanks again to Wan Ying for talking about these difficult topics with me, and a very special thank you this week goes out to Xiangxia Ren, like Wan Ying and myself. Xiangxia Ren, for the meek shall inherit the earth. And last but not least, thank you to you, the listener, for listening. I love it when you listen to this podcast, and I look forward to hearing from you. So, 再见, 再会, 再聊. Bye-bye.